Thanks for listening to season 4 of the Utah Real Estate Podcast.
The most downloaded series in the whole state and possibly the world.
Hello, I'm Steph Scholl here with the one and only Silver Dollar Man.
Also known as Scott Stevenson. This year, we are consulting with community leaders about the future of the Beehive State.
And how you can best secure a house for your home.
Join the thousands.
And my mom.
That subscribe every Thursday for the most exciting hour of the week.
Scott, we were so excited to chat with our guest that we didn't even do our wonderful intro that the listeners all listened to.
That's right. I was spellbound.
So, recording it afterwards.
Yes.
Our guest is Ari Bruning. He's the CEO of Envision Utah, but Scott, give them his resume.
Well, I like him because he went to Harvard. He's a Harvard law grad. He told me he almost stayed east, but of course he had to come back to Utah, which always happens, Stephanie. When they come back east, they go to school, they're intelligent, they're brilliant, and they always go back to Utah.
Okay, but he also got the highest score possible on both the ACT and the LSAT.
Barely beating out me.
Lies, guys, to listen to him. The thing that I was so impressed about is that we could ask him any question and he had an answer.
Right off the top of his head.
So if you're someone that you do not like what's going on with Utah's growth, what should they do?
Listen to this podcast is what they ought to do.
And then go to envisionutah.org and give your opinion.
Absolutely.
Because that's the only way that they're going to figure out what's best for all of us in Utah.
That's right. And what the people of Utah want for the future of Utah.
So here is this episode with Ari.
So here's the first question I have for you, Ari, is that, you know, I'm not from the state of Utah. I've only been here for a few years. So what is, you're the CEO of Envision Utah. What is Envision Utah?
Well, we were born 25 years ago.
Whoa.
When Mike Leavitt and Larry Miller and a bunch of others were watching all the growth that was happening in Utah. Believe it or not, percentage-wise, we were growing faster in the 90s than we are now. And they were saying, where's all this growth taking us? You know, we see issues with air quality and water and traffic. You know, sounds familiar,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, sure.
And so what they said was, we need a process to bring everybody together and have these conversations about where we want to be and how we want to get there. So that was the birthplace of Envision Utah. So we're a nonprofit and we just facilitate the discussion.
So you're not a government entity.
We have no power to do anything.
Okay.
Other than the power of convening and good ideas.
I see. Okay. So kind of an influencer.
Yeah.
So to speak.
Yeah. For Instagram influencers.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm using that term. Yeah. An influencer.
Yeah. So we bring the private sector, the public sector together and bring the public into the conversation too.
Oh.
And we find when you look out far enough and have the right people at the table, everybody tends to agree on what we ought to do.
Okay, so this has been around for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. And can we go back to what you said that in the 90s we were growing more percentage-wise than today? Explain that a little bit.
I mean, in raw numbers every year, we are growing more now, right?
Yeah.
But percentage-wise in the 90s, we were growing faster. We've had periods where we actually grew even faster than that, you know, because we started really small and we had waves of immigration come in, you know, pioneers and so forth. But in the 90s, we had a lot of in-migration and we also had a lot of people having kids. And so that strong growth. In the last decade from 2010 to 2020, we were the fastest growing in the country. Still not as fast as the 90s. And again, a lot of it was our own kids, but also strong in-migration. The last couple of years, it's been mostly in-migration and less our own kids.
But before that, it was because people were having so many kids. That's how.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they're not leaving, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. People ask me, why do we grow? And I say, well, it's two things. We have a high quality of life and we have a strong economy. So your kids want to stay. They can stay.
Yeah.
And other people like you want to come join us in Utah because it's a great place, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So I don't know how to stop the growth other than make it not a great place or kill our economy. That'll stop the growth.
No, it's interesting because I come from a family of 8 kids and I just was thinking about how I feel like, especially back when I was growing up, all these families had like 6 kids or 5 kids. And now it's like 2 or 3 or 4 is like a big family. But that is interesting that was primarily our growth forever. And now it's shifted. So I want to know, like, what Envision Utah, right? What's your guys's, like, do you have a vision for Utah? Or are you just like an unbiased third party or?
Well, we formulate visions for different places and geographies or for the whole state based on what people tell us they want. So the most recent time we did it for the whole state was in 2015. We did a big statewide effort we called Your Utah, Your Future. And we got 50,000 Utahns to react to a set of scenarios for how Utah could grow. And what they told us is what usually they tell us every time we do this, which is they wanted a future where we have a wide variety of housing types for different incomes and life stages. And we have many mixed-use centers. So you might ask, what's a mixed-use center? So think about downtown Salt Lake is on a large scale. You have jobs, you have housing, you have shopping all in the same place, and it's walkable. So that's at a big scale. At smaller scales, you can think of our historic little main streets in our towns, you know, same kind of idea. And so when you have those scattered around throughout the Wasatch Front, what that does is it means you have a lot of trips that might otherwise have gone on the freeway or on our larger roads that don't. So people are driving short distances or they're even walking or biking. And for a whole variety of reasons, that just makes the traffic situation better, the air quality better. Yeah, and when people see scenarios that play out that way, they like it. And that doesn't mean everybody has to live in one of those places, but it benefits people who don't as well.
Yeah. So.
In the state, what is the high growth areas right now?
Washington County, St. George, I believe is the fastest growing in the country.
Wow. We just talked to a real estate agent from down there.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then Wasatch County is also growing very, very fast. Southern Salt Lake County, Northern Utah County, that's been booming for years now. Those are some of our highest growth areas.
So what are some of the things that you guys are currently working on?
Well, we just finished a visioning effort for Utah County. We partnered with all of the chambers of commerce in Utah County because they were looking at their growth and saying, what are we going to do, right? So Utah County is projected to have 1.5 million people in 50 years, in less than 50 years. So think about that. That's bigger than Salt Lake County today.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we'll partner with the chambers, we'll raise the money to be able to do it, and then we'll identify all the right people to be involved in different committees and figure out scenarios for the future. And then we always take the scenarios to the public and let them choose the future they want. So that we just wrapped that one up. We're at the tail end now, just about done with a vision for the Jordan River.
Hey, Scott,
yeah.
he's always dissing on the Jordan River.
Well, the Jordan River, you know, I can jump across it. I can jump across it in a couple places.
So tell us about
that. Yeah, river means something different than you to you than it does to us.
His eyes are going to start to light up.
Yeah, what's that all about?
Well, first of all, the Envision Utah got involved in the Jordan River back in 2008, and we brought, I think it's 16 cities along the river and three counties together to come up with a vision. And out of that came the idea for a lake-to-lake trail, which is now completed.
Yeah.
Which I appreciate that trail.
It's pretty cool.
I go all the time. So.
It's pretty cool. It's actually, as far as we can tell, it's part of the longest connected paved trail west of the Mississippi.
Oh, cool.
Because you can get from Ogden Canyon to Provo Canyon, basically. So, you know, that was completed. A lot of work was done to improve the river. And so, and an entity called the Jordan River Commission was created out of that. And so recently the Jordan River Commission said to us, you know, we feel like a lot of what was in that vision was accomplished. So let's come together and figure out what's next. So we've been working on that. And a lot of what we heard from the public there was, we like it, just we want it better. So, you know, better maintenance.
That's always the public.
Yeah. They didn't want anything radically different, right? Yeah. They still want it to be a natural place with trail heads and so forth. So, you know, maybe some better access, better maintenance, improved safety, those kinds of things is what came out of that.
Well, so, you know, I'm interested in the funding aspect of this a little bit. So you're a nonprofit. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And these...
We do accept donations, by the way.
Yeah. I'm thinking
about... Silver Dollar Man, open up that wallet.
You take donations, I guess, from anybody.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, most of our funding comes from foundations, you know, the Eccles Foundation, for example, or Zions Bank, large corporations, those kinds of things.
And so is the funding for to accomplish projects like the PATH... How does that work? I mean, what is the basis for the funding? Where does the funding go? I guess
that's so the funding goes to our staff time to facilitate these projects. It also goes to public outreach. It's not cheap to try to reach thousands of people. You know, it used to be you could go on the news and everybody would hear you. That's not true anymore, right?
No, so, that's not true. Yeah.
And sometimes we'll need to hire some experts on different projects too to, you know, model traffic outcomes or do some market analysis of what's going to happen with the real estate market or things like that. So
is it kind of in combination also? So like if you come up with ideas or concepts on how to do different things, let's take the trail, for instance, you coordinate with a government entity, make suggestions to them of what the public wants, and then they decide, oh, well, this is a great idea. Let's use part of our tax base in order to fund this particular project. Is that kind of how it works in coordination?
Yeah, and those government entities are involved in the project all the way along. So they're learning and hearing from the public and then go forth and make things happen. So, you know, I'll give you an example of how that works. So we were hired by the state to do a vision for the Point of the Mountain area.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So not just the prison site, but the whole area.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we held a bunch of workshops with the public and we gave them maps and said, draw on the map roads and transit and put where you think development should happen. And somebody in one of those workshops said, you know, State Street ends. Why doesn't it just keep going? And
that is a good point.
You know, Redwood Road keeps going. But basically, other than Redwood Road, you have to get on a freeway to go south through there. And so out of that grew the idea for let's run a road south. Not a freeway, just a
road.
A road, yeah. And that is now on the plans, and it's moving forward. And it's, I think it's scheduled to be funded in the next 10 years.
Oh, super.
Going back to water for a second. So what's the State Water Strategy Advisory Team? Because water is a big
deal
that people, I mean, Scott is worried about water, but other people are as well. So what are you guys doing with that?
Minor issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Governor Herbert asked us to facilitate the work of the State Water Strategy Advisory Team. That's a mouthful.
Yeah.
Basically to create a 50-year strategy for water. And so we had, I think, 37 people involved, you know, everybody from the water districts who manage the water to environmental advocacy groups. It took us 4 years, actually, to get them all on the same page. But we got there. We got to a 110-page document that everybody signed off on. It's really hard to summarize 110 pages, but number one thing that came out of it was everybody agreed we need to use less water, and that needs to be strategy number one, and number two, and number three. And so if you look at the document, that's up front. That's first, because that's number one. You know, that's everything from, you know, maybe our landscaping needs to look a little different. We don't have to be Phoenix with rocks and weeds, right? But, you know, maybe you don't need grass everywhere in your yard. It's been shown, this has been piloted a few places in Utah, where even if you don't charge more for using more of the secondary water, you just let people know how much they're using and how that compares to their neighbors, people will reduce their use by something like 30%.
Oh, that's a good citizen. Good citizens.
Yeah. Just knowing helps, right?
Yeah, so, exactly.
I think it's so cool that it's so many different areas, from like water to working with the Commerce Group down in Orem. And so what for you, because how long have you been with Envision Utah?
10 years.
10 years?
Yeah.
So what have been some of like the most rewarding projects you've seen in those 10 years?
Oh, that's a hard one. First of all, I have to say what I do is really fun because I don't have to be the expert in each of these fields. I just have to be the facilitator, right?
Yeah.
I bring the experts into the room and I learn so much about all these different things. So it's a lot of fun. I think the Point of the Mountain was a really rewarding, fun one for me because it's something where, you know, we're always looking out to 2050 and it's hard to say, you know, did we move the ship this much or that much, right? But it's one where things are actually moving forward and it's fun to see. We've also been working on education, which has been a lot of fun to me. It's a little different than what we've done in the past. We've been about transportation and housing and all that. But you can apply the same process to education, get the right people in the room and so forth. And
now, how would you affect education? I mean, I can see the other things. Education, that's a little different.
So it's a similar process. You get the right people in the room and you engage the public and figure out what we should do. I actually went into it a little worried that we'd see everyone arguing over what to do and nobody would agree. Not the case at all.
What are the major concerns that you've seen for education here in Utah?
So everybody agreed on a few things. So first of all, what happens before kids get to school matters a lot. So your brain is developing, like 80% of your brain development happens in the first 4 years of life. So after you're born, before you get to school. Mm-hmm. And there's been a lot of research that how much your parents or other caregivers interact with you, talk with you in loving ways matters for that brain development. And that's not just for academic preparation, but for being resilient and developing things like grit and things like that. And so we learned all this from everybody. And then we went out and we sought a grant where now we're working with groups that talk to parents to help them encourage the parents to have these interactions with their kids.
Oh, interesting.
Beginning at birth. So that's strategy number one before you get to school.
Is that take into account preschool classes, or was it more education in regards to just parents understanding how important those first few years are?
It's some of both. So preschool matters, especially for kids who don't get that at home. It helps them get up to speed before they get to kindergarten. So that matters. Obviously the parents are primarily responsible at that age, but so early childhood, that was strategy number one that everybody agreed on. Strategy number two was the research is clear within a school, nothing matters more than the teacher. And in Utah, we have a shortage of teachers. We quantified the numbers and found that we need about 3,000 new teachers every year because we have a lot of people who leave the profession. I think the number is in the first 7 years, and more than half quit.
Why is that?
Well, you ask them and they say it's stress and burnout, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What causes that?
Yeah.
Probably a lot of things. Also, salaries are really low.
Yeah, because I mean, I was just thinking about how many of my friends started out as teachers and they've had
And they've left.
Oh, yeah. Like so many people have. Yeah.
Say it's not worth it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I have people tell me, well, a lot of professions, there's high turnover. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, this is different. You spent 4 years getting a degree to do this, and you left the profession. Mm-hmm. You didn't just leave your job. You left the profession.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This is like an accountant. You get an accounting degree, and then 5 years later, you just leave the profession because you're sick of it, right? Like, it doesn't happen in those kinds of numbers in other professions. So we need 3,000 a year. We graduate about 1,500 from our different teaching programs in the state. So that doesn't mean we have classrooms without teachers necessarily. We're just bringing in people who don't have a degree in teaching or other things. We spend a number of months working with different stakeholders to try to figure out how do we attract more people to the profession and retain more people without spending a lot of money on compensation, and basically gave up because all of our surveys and research said it's about compensation. So we surveyed college students and a huge number said, I've thought about teaching, doesn't pay enough. So then we said, okay, let's get the right people in the room and figure out if we need to increase compensation, what's the right number? And they came up with a starting salary of $60,000 and north of six figures when you retire. So,
and is that in place right now? Or
no, we're making progress.
That's
I was like,
that's
wait,
the goal.
All you teachers out there.
Yeah, that's
the governor that's has the picked up the 60,000 starting salary number and has been talking
about
it.
Well, you know, what's so interesting to me about that is that, you know, of course, I come from the D.C. area. There is so much, I don't want to say waste, but I would say there's so much money out there. It's surprising that money has not been allocated towards that issue, because it's really a huge, huge issue for a society, how the children are taught and who's teaching them and how well, you know, how well are the teachers skilled. It would just seem to me that that would be a priority, but it hasn't been, apparently.
Yeah, you know, and I have people tell me, well, they only work 9 months out of the year. Well, first of all, that's not entirely true, but but I always tell them it doesn't matter. We're not attracting and retaining, right? And like, right.
Yeah,
I don't
what difference does it make?
What objection
you
have,
yeah,
right? It's the marketplace.
And even the 9 months of the year, I have a sister that it's her first year teaching. She might kill me for talking about this, but she's in a really hard school. The story she tells, it's like you can't make up the stuff. So to hear that 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 is in the works to increase salary, because it does, at least you can know, hey, I'm making a little bit more and trying to make a difference, even if it's only with one kid listening you know?
Yeah. I have people tell me, like, you know, doctors sometimes put up with some pretty horrible working conditions, right?
And yeah.
You don't hear them complain.
No. And like teaching, like we need those teachers.
We want to attract our best and brightest to the classroom and keep them there. I was going through the list of things. So you got early childhood before school, you got teachers. And then the third thing that we're doing a lot of work on now is just getting more kids to go beyond high school and finish something beyond high school. College of some kind. It could be a certification, a 1-year degree, 2-year degree, 4-year degree, doctorate, you know, whatever it is. But all the evidence shows that there aren't going to be a lot of jobs in the future for people who don't have something beyond high school. And so we surveyed 7,000 high school students and we asked them, what are your plans beyond high school? And what do you view the barriers? What are the top barriers for going to college? And first of all, 80% said, I'm going to college. And the data shows only about 65% actually do within 5 years after high school. So somewhere people are dropping out. But what they said the top barriers were it was costs and student loans. And there were some misperceptions around that too. People overestimated the costs and the amount of student loans you have to take out. And, you know, Utah, I think we are the lowest in the country, I think, for student loans. For the amount of student loans when you graduate.
Oh, really?
And there was also a little bit of...
why is that? Some subsidies, possibly?
We do a pretty good job of funding our universities with tax dollars, and they're just very efficient.
Utah's pretty impressed. I have to say, coming from the East Coast, I've been pretty impressed with how Utah handles things as far as their economics, as far as how they care about their people. You know, everyone that I talk to, such as yourself, who's on the inside working these things, seem to be well focused on making Utah a better place to live. And this is another example of it. I mean, that quote that you're saying about
student loans. Yeah, by and large, our leadership is, you know, they're in it for the right reasons and they're trying to do the right things, right?
Yeah.
People can quibble here and there, but.
Yeah.
So with the cost of student loans, one thing you could argue that based on what we found from the students, there's a little bit of debt aversion that's probably more than there should be. I think it was 70% of the high school students said it's unacceptable to graduate from college with more than $10,000 in student loans. But then when you ask them how much more are you going to make with a 4-year degree, they get it that it's like $20,000, $30,000 more a year. And so when you put those two numbers together, you're going to pay off those student loans in 1 year. Maybe we shouldn't be quite as averse to student loan debt.
Don't you think some of that might come from the kind of a general perception that on self-reliance, that self-reliant means you never go into debt, you never rely on someone else, whereas in reality, a balanced approach to that is sometimes you do need to rely on government programs and things of that nature in order to get you over the hump.
Yeah. It's not a bad thing that we avoid debt in Utah, right? That's a good thing.
Right.
But yes. Well, and I'll also say there are so many programs in Utah that it is possible to make it through school without any debt or with very low debt. You know, Salt Lake Community College, if you meet their income requirements, you can get through without paying a dime in tuition, right?
Right.
So there are programs in place.
So the education one's been one that you're proud of. Anything else that you've enjoyed working on?
Well, that 2015, that statewide Your Utah, Your Future vision was a lot of fun because we got into 11 different topics. So I felt like I learned about everything from energy to water to outdoor recreation. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I was sitting at the feet of experts and just learning. So that was a lot of fun.
That's cool. So what do you guys feel like, I mean, because we're projected to grow, right?
Yep.
And so are there any projects that you guys are working on of how to maintain the quality of life with growth or?
Yes.
So, is that like the biggest thing you hear about?
Yes.
Yeah.
So So first of all, I think I said earlier, I mean, we grow because we have a high quality of life and a strong economy, right? So as long as those three things are true, we're going to grow.
Yeah.
We can't just, you know, close the doors and keep people out. I call it the drawbridge syndrome. I'm in the castle, pull up the drawbridge now, right? But so the best we can do is manage the growth so that we maintain the things we love about Utah and retain our quality of life. So we recently did a survey of Utahns, and we found much more concern about growth than we'd ever seen in 25 years. And so we've been working with the governor's office and with the Utah League of Cities and Towns and others on launching what we're calling a statewide growth conversation. So this should launch in the next several months, where we're just have a conversation with Utahns about, hey, we're growing. What do we do about it? And how do we keep our quality of life the way we want it? Because we can't just stop the growth. That's not an option, right? So
how do people find out to participate?
I mean, we'll buy ad space online, you know, videos and things like that. But you can also sign up for our newsletter on our website, and that'll keep you up to date.
So just envisionutah.org? Yeah,
envisionutah.org.
Okay.
And they can just write. They can – ideas, concepts that they may have – you never know. So, I mean, you know, some guy's sitting there and he's got a great idea of how to help growth, manage growth, and they can just send something to you guys.
Yeah, you could just send us something, but we also have surveys almost constantly where you can go weigh in. So, once we launch that, I'm sure right off the bat, we'll just have a call for people to take a survey and give us their ideas. What would you do about the growth?
But if you can't stop growth, it's more about managing it, right?
Right.
But a lot of people want to stop growth.
Well, which actually worries me because, you know, people, I hear from a lot of people, I don't want to turn into California. Well, how California got to where they are, in my view, is they tried to stop growth. I mean, they implemented all these
regulations
All these regulations. It is so hard to get a housing project approved in California. It takes at least 10 years if you ever get there. And that's part of the reason why their housing costs are so high, right? Because they've constrained the supply so much. And it's also, I think, why their traffic is so bad is because rather than planning for the growth, they tried to stop it.
Yeah.
And the growth happened anyway.
Right.
And I think it's dangerous if that's what we try to do, is try to stop it.
Well, I like that. And I like that example, too, because a lot of times the public, well, I should say all of us think in simple terms a lot of times, meaning I don't like growth. So
I get it.
I don't want growth. And so let's stop. But there is so much more to it. And there's just so many, it's like a spider web that goes out. It's just not that simplistic to be able to say, no, we don't want to grow anymore. It will grow if it grows. And you can either grow smartly or, like California, I don't want to say in a dumb way, but in a disaster.
Hopefully no politicians from California.
Yeah. I mean, well, you know. Sorry,
they might agree with us, too. I don't know. I mean, the good news is Southern California has so many orders of magnitude more people than us that we're not in danger of going there. But
You're comparing California. And I think, I've been to California. It's a beautiful state. But unfortunately, I think what you said is an important point that, you know, when you try to stop growth, you can't stop growth. You can just try to maintain it. But there are good ways to do that and bad ways.
My mom, for example, has complained to me before about the growth. And I have to remind her, Mom, you had 7 kids. Like, you're part of the problem.
So you're part of a big family, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I have 4. I'm part of the problem. But, you know, that's something we value in Utah. We value family, right? And so making it a place where our kids can stay is something we ought to be trying to do. And I'm worried that if we try to, for example, just not approve housing projects in an effort to stop growth, we're not going to price out the people selling their million-dollar homes in California and moving to Utah. We're going to price out our own kids.
Right.
And so, you know, trying to stop the growth, I think, just hurts us and our kids.
Well, and that's a great point, too, because a lot of people don't like to see multi-units go up. But multi-units house young families, and that means it's usually your kids. And, you know, when it's your kids, it always seems to be different. When it's other people's
kids.
I don't care about that.
I think I live somewhere else.
You
know, multifamily housing, apartments, townhomes, those kinds of things, the market is shifting in that direction. So I don't think there's any going back, right?
Yeah.
And it's not a terrible thing. That's that's how our kids are going to afford to get into the housing market, right? But we need to, I get it. People don't want a six-story apartment complex in their single-family neighborhood, right?
Right.
Absolutely understood, right? But there are places where it makes a lot of sense to put these things. So near jobs, near shopping, near public transportation. So where you can, so you can put a lot of people in one place where they don't have to drive very far to get anywhere.
Yeah.
So is that what you guys are like seeing for the growth, to build up instead of out?
We're going to do both in Utah. So we have enough growth that we need to do both, and we will do both. And that, and we have something like a 50,000 housing unit shortage right now. And that's why housing prices are so high. Mm-hmm. And so anything we can do to get more housing units on the ground is good.
Yeah.
So whether that's, you know, high rises in downtown or whether that's more single family homes in Eagle Mountain, all of it helps.
Because I was with some friends the other day, and a friend made a comment where she said, "I am so disgusted by all the houses that are going up." And I just
except for her own, right?
Yeah, and I'm one of those people that I say this all the time. All you listeners know that, like, I'm so grateful for that mink farmer that sold their stinky mink farm, because A, it was smelly, and B, it gave me a place to, like, live. And so I do think, like, as you're talking about this attitude, this mind shift change of we're going to grow, but like, let's really plan for it. And I think it is cool to see these different ways to plan for that so that everyone's kids and family can stay here.
Yeah. Well, and there are so many benefits too, to, you know, smaller lots and townhomes and apartments that, you know, even if you don't want to live in it or live next door to it, it's beneficial to all of us.
For example,
it condenses growth on less land. So the farmland you don't want to see disappear, that's a way to keep more of the farmland still. You know, there's less outdoor watering that needs to happen in the yards because there may be no yard. And so we use less water, and it condenses things onto less land so that people don't have to travel as far. So there's less driving and better air quality. And so many benefits. And the truth is, we need some of that. We need single family homes too. We need we need all of it.
Well, speaking of agriculture, that was one thing that we wanted to ask you is how is the state agriculture being preserved? Because I just talked about that farm that's no longer there that I'm living on.
Well, it's challenging in Utah because our best farmland is where everyone wants to live.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. A lot of our best farmland is on the Wasatch Front.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Or used to be.
I mean, that makes sense, though, because down south is a desert, so.
Well, it's where everybody settled to begin with, because that's where the good soil was.
That's where the soil and the water is, right?
Exactly.
And that's where you want to live, is where the water is too, right?
Absolutely. So,
and in terms of preserving our agriculture, first of all, when we did our statewide vision, we actually heard kind of a shockingly high level of support for agriculture.
Really?
I was surprised.
You mean they want to preserve it?
They want to preserve it. And people, what we heard was people want to be self-sufficient and be able to feed ourselves. And that's a tall order, because I think something like 2 or 3% of our fruits and vegetables come from Utah. So that's a challenge, right?
Yeah.
And when there's market demand for housing or businesses on a piece of ground, it's going to make more money than whatever else you're going to grow on that ground. Right? Yeah, I had a farmer tell me, you know, he was right off an I-15 interchange, and he said, I've been offered $1 million an acre for my land. And you know, he's in his 60s, and he said, my kids don't want to farm it. What should I do? And I said, well, I'll tell you what I'd do. but there are things we can do. So in a situation like that, you know, maybe he could go approach the city and say, you know, I'd like to keep a bunch of this land in farmland. So could I just take all the density that's allocated to my property, and we'll put it all on a third of it and preserve the rest, or something like that? So there are things we can do. I don't think we're ever going to preserve all our farmland, but we could probably target some of our best farmland to preserve. I do want to reiterate, though, the best way to reduce how much farmland we use is to grow on less land.
To grow up instead of out.
So you'll hear people say, well, I want 1 acre lots in my community to preserve the rural feel. And that may be, but those 1 acre lots spread out a lot and chew up a lot of farmland.
Sure.
Interesting.
Well, now speaking of Southern Utah, dry, Southern Utah. So what's this deal about a pipeline from Lake Powell to St. George?
Yeah, oh, that's
is that a real thing?
That's a very complicated subject. So.
Well, maybe we don't want to get into it, but it is a real thing, apparently.
We've been talking with St. George about doing a vision down there, so maybe we'll get into this more. But we worked with the Division of Water Resources to model Washington County's water.
Yeah.
And we did one scenario where we said, we're not going to build that Lake Powell pipeline. And we got rid of every farm in Washington Kane County, and we xeriscaped everything. And I think we got to like 2044 before we ran out of water. So that's why people are talking about the Lake Powell pipeline. Of course, there are legitimate questions of, is there going to be any water in Lake Powell? right now, there's not, right? So complicated discussion.
I hope that we can like ask you all these questions and that you know what's going on. It's cool that you are just this, because you've worked in all these different areas. You're this.
I know just enough to be dangerous at all.
Yeah.
If this could be your soapbox, you know, like your platform to all the Utahns listening, what are some things that you want to share with them about
your vision for Utah?
Yeah, your vision for Utah. Maybe cool things that they didn't realize that are going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. Actually, that's probably a good first thing to say, is that there is a lot of planning going on that people may not know about. So, mm-hmm. The mayors of all the cities come together and they come up with a vision for how we're going to grow and how to build the infrastructure to serve that. And I think a lot of that's kind of invisible to the public, and they just see the growth and say, I don't like this. What are we doing about it? Right. And we actually are doing a lot. There's probably more we can do, and we'd love to hear from the public about what that is. One other message that we've talked about a lot already, I think, is growth brings a lot of challenges, but we can't just stop the growth. And growth is a good problem to have at the end of the day, right? Because that means you're a desirable place. Mm-hmm. We want to be a desirable place, yeah, right? Yeah. I would rather have those challenges than Detroit's challenges. Yeah. Right? So, and growth brings challenges, but it also brings a lot of good things. We're getting to a size now where we're on the map, right? We have a brand new cool airport. We have, I remember hearing, I was reminded of this the other day. I used to be told, we're never going to get a cheesecake factory because we're not big enough. Well, guess what? We have two, right?
Where's the other one?
City Creek and then Murray.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't know that. I only knew the one.
Yeah.
We're getting of this size where we're really on the map. Our economy's doing so well. We have lowest unemployment in the country. So these aren't bad things, mm-hmm. but we do need to be really deliberate in how we grow and make sure that we're preserving our quality of life. And a lot of that, as I've said, is about making sure that we build a lot of housing near jobs, transportation, shopping, places where destinations are, so that people don't have to drive long distances to get everywhere.
Well, and it's interesting too, because even thinking before, like tracks, it was just the bus system. And I used to work downtown, so I would take tracks all the time, and I loved it. And so it's just cool to see. And that probably was a project that took forever, mm-hmm. for them to get going, you know, but like how these projects that you're working on right now, a lot of times, like you said, it's not the next couple of years, but it's usually you're planning 50 years down the road. So people don't always care, because it's like,
yeah,
it's in the future, because we're procrastinators.
You'll be around 50 years from now, but unfortunately, I don't think I will. Yeah.
Take the Mountain View Corridor as an example. Yeah. So I think it was 2003. This is before my time. Vision Utah got involved with UDOT in doing a vision for the west side of Salt Lake County, that became the Mountain View Corridor. And so I can imagine the people working on that in 2003 going, well, this is way out. Well, now it's being built.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
And everything's springing up out there. Yeah. Harriman's like trying to get into Harriman now is like trying to get into downtown Salt Lake. Have you ever tried to get out into Harriman to rush hour traffic?
No.
Well, I have, because I have a kid out there and it's a mess now. I mean, that's how much it's grown. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. And Salt Lake County is getting close to being about out of land.
Yeah.
I guess back to the growing up versus out. Salt Lake County is where half of our jobs in the state are. So So growing up in Salt Lake County wouldn't be a bad thing to make sure we have housing near those jobs.
There are so many positive things going on in Utah that it's really quite amazing that you have. I mean, let's be serious. Utah is not exactly, you know, your most metropolitan state in the union, but I think the state is really, really up and coming in all aspects. Don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. But by the way, we are one of the most urban states in the country.
Is that right?
That surprises people. But
that's interesting.
I think we are on the map now.
Yeah.
I was looking at the numbers. We're going to be, in the next 10 years, we're going to be about the size Portland is now.
Really?
We are larger than Pittsburgh. We're
larger than Pittsburgh.
Yeah, larger than Pittsburgh. I think we're about the same as St. Louis. We're a real metropolitan area.
Yeah. I love it. You know, I'm fascinated by the fact that Envision Utah was formed as, you might call it, what, an advisory board to maybe, like we've said before, you know, the cool kid who invites all the people to his house and
yep.
Everybody goes there and sits around and chats. And next thing you know, they're all engaged on accomplishing something. So that's what Envision Utah is, kind of like the cool kid's house everybody's coming.
Yeah. And you know, we like to say, if we did the process right, then the people who went through it are just going to go forth and do, right?
Yeah.
So people ask me, is this just going to be a report on a shelf? And I'm like, well, I don't know if the report even matters. It's the fact that people were in a room and they learned and then they went forth and did.
And then they go and do something.
Yeah.
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 Is that ever hard though, when you like put together all this work, if it doesn't come about, or does it usually?
Yeah. Well, it's a mixed bag, right?
Yeah.
And it's also really hard sometimes to point to something and say that wouldn't have happened if it weren't for us, right?
Like, yeah.
It may not have.
Yeah.
So, but you see things come to fruition, and you're like, I think we had a good hand in doing that. So,
you know, how big is Envision Utah?
We have 12 employees.
We have 12 employees,
yeah.
And has it been pretty steady that way?
I think since the beginning. I think we've ranged from like 8 to 15 over the years, but around. 10
but
to
your
12
influence
has
to obviously be pretty substantial for the small amount of group.
Yeah, maybe more important than the 12 employees is the 30 people on our executive committee
who are
the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate and the President of Zions Bank and those kinds
really?
Of people. And then we have a 100-plus person board as well of people who come together and cross-pollinate and learn and so forth. So.
That's cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Silver Dollar Man, I don't know if you feel this way, but the big thing that I've learned, get involved and share your opinion, because you might be like that person that said, hey, why isn't State Street going all the way down?
Right. And I have brilliant ideas all the time, and I never communicate them, Stephanie. and this is a way for people with my kind of talent to be able to contribute. And how would they best be able to do that?
Well, we also put out our own podcast. We've been tackling one issue at a time. So we have a series of 3 podcasts on water, and we have a series on air quality, and we just did one on disaster resilience.
I like that.
What's
we're
going to
do
your podcast?
Housing next, Your Utah, Your Future. The best way is to go to our website, envisionutah.org, and sign up for our newsletter, and then you'll
is
see.
It free?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You'll get an email probably once or twice a month with links and ways to get involved and things like that.
Just a plug for all you homeowners out there. Remember, you get to choose your title company.
And here at Title One, there's a reason why there's a one in our title. Learn all about our colossal closings
by going to askusutah.com.
We celebrate with you in securing a house for your home.